Welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast, the place for dads into self-improvement, or as I like to call it, dad-proven. My name's Joe Horton, and I'm going to be your host for the next hour or so as we go on a journey of discovery. On each episode of this podcast, I deliver to you conversations that will expand what you think is possible for you across many areas of life. I'm also going to delve into some tough and interesting subjects so you get insights and a different perspective to take away with you. I do this by speaking to fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs, and ultra athletes, professors, psychologists, anthropologists, and also some ordinary dads like you doing some amazing things. Let's face it, none of us get a handbook when we become dads. We have to learn on the job. But being a dad represents a golden opportunity for personal growth and reflection about who we really are, because daily our kids shine a light on every nook and cranny of our personalities. If you're anything like me, you're searching for information about how to be a better, more capable, competent, effective man and father. A role model your kids can look up to and demonstrate a life to them where you yourself are growing, thriving, and learning new things, acquiring new skills and knowledge that you put into action. But it goes deeper than that. When you thrive as a man, everyone around you benefits, and the ripple effect is immeasurable. At its core, this is what Guild of Dads is really about. So I'm going to ask you a simple question. What would your life look like if you could get your mental health, physical health, relationships, and self-improvement in optimal shape? All at the same time as showing up as the best dad you can be. Think about that. Then write it down. There are a few ways you can get involved with Guild of Dads. You can listen to this podcast first and foremost, but you can also follow me over on Twitter or LinkedIn. I've already started a monthly dad's hike this year for 2 hours every month, which is free to join, set amongst the beautiful backdrop of the Ashdown Forest in West Sussex, 1 hour outside of London. You can also grab a copy of my book, The Dad Blueprint, which will fast track you free straight into our private Discord community, the Guild of Dads Brotherhood. To get this, go to dadblueprintbook.com. That's dadblueprintbook.com. To join the monthly hike, or if you simply want to reach out, shoot me a DM or drop me an email to joe@guildofdads.com. Today, I'm joined by fitness, health, positivity and habits coach, not to mention poker player Tyler Tote. You've probably witnessed how social media has become a cesspool of negativity, hysteria and infamous individuals over the last few years. Often, such individuals make the most noise and get the most negative attention than anyone else as they put on their social media mask. Which is why when someone comes along who is an antidote to all of that, it's super refreshing. Well, it is to me at least. In my view, when you're trying to make positive changes to your life, if you have become stuck in a rut, becoming an outlier and doing the opposite to what everyone else is doing can be tough. It can be a challenge, which is why you need guys like Tyler in your network and counteracting the voices in your head telling you that you can't do it. There's a ton of useful info in today's episode. Expect to hear how one of the biggest gut checks for him was having loads of money and his first marriage falling apart. How concentrating on what you really value instead of what you think you should value is a game changer. The life-changing experience him and his wife had fostering and later adopting two of their three kids, and the challenges of his wife's first pregnancy, and how he does a self-audit once a month covering the most important areas of life. And now to my conversation with Tyler. Tyler, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
I'm honored to be here, my brother. Thanks so much for having me, Joe. I appreciate it, man.
I'm glad to have you on here because obviously I graced you with my presence on your No Limits podcast a few months back, and we had a deal going that you were going to reciprocate. So here you are.
I'm super happy, man, and grateful to be here. I know you've interviewed some just beasts. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I'm a big fan of everything you put out, brother. So I'm honestly just honored to be here today, man. Despite the technical difficulties we got on, you know.
Yeah. We're the less that can be said about social media platforms and their weird quirks and isms. And yeah, I'm kind of on one of those days where you're just done with tech and you're just like, actually, I just want the tech gods to kind of smile on me for a little bit. So the reason I wanted to speak to you is because you've got quite an interesting story to tell and stuff. And I first kind of linked up with you back on Twitter. And I know you on Twitter as kind of Mr. Positive. You are probably one of the most positive guys I know on Twitter, which can be like a bit of a cesspool of negativity at times. And you've experienced that, I know, firsthand. But when did you, so you obviously, you have been on a journey in the last few years. Has it always been this way? Have you always been this guy that is kind of positive and a kind of go-getter and someone that kind of inspires other men to expand their horizons and expand what they think is positive, possible for themselves?
You know, I think I've had it in me my whole life. I think if you look back to even in grade school and a lot of my high school football coach, my high school basketball coach, a lot of people would say Tyler has great leadership skills. He, you know, I was the best sports for me were like tennis and running, but I always liked that team environment. I liked everybody to win, you know? And so I think I've always had it in me, but I think I got away from it. You know, I smile as you ask that question, because I think if you ask my ex-wife from a decade ago, she would laugh at that and say, no, you know, not a chance. And then I think if you ask my current wife, you know, what the first couple of years of marriage was, she would laugh too and say, I was a pretty pessimistic, negative guy. I kind of went through a rough season in my late 20s. That divorce kind of sent me on a pretty downward spiral, got really into drinking and, you know, just doing some really negative things in my life, and took a job I wasn't necessarily passionate about, worked that for about 6.5 years. And the first few years of that job, I kind of let it defeat me, where I just kind of had the woe is me. How did my life end up here? You know, I found myself in my early 30s, married kid, gaining weight, kind of no purpose and no mission, right? Like just going into the office every day to kind of work on things that other people told me were important, but I didn't really care about, and kind of just floating through life. Well, what's on TV tonight? Let's hope that there's something that can entertain me. You know, well, good, there's a big football game on I care about. I'll meet buddies and drink and watch that. That'll bring me some happiness, you know? And I was just kind of floating through for a few years like that, man. So definitely not always positive. I think people who knew me during that time, I had glimpses, you know, where I'd kind of, I'm going to hit the gym, I'm going to get positive again. And it was kind of a start and stop thing. And then one day, man, about coming up on 5 years ago, is when I got on my knees, man. And I was in tears for about 2 hours. I knew I wasn't living the way that I should live, right? And I'm like, I'm going to take my life back. You know, I'm not going to be a passenger anymore. I'm going to change everything about the way I'm going. I'm going to change my mind. If I got to spend every penny to hire mentors and do whatever I have to do, I'm going to do it, because I refuse to get to the end of my life and say that, you know, well, I just existed.
And did you talked about kind of what's kind of interesting, what you said about them was like how you were going along with what everyone else was doing and you were kind of following the crowd. Do you think that that was your experience, but do you think that a lot of guys get into this where they're like stuck in this kind of, well, this is what everyone else is doing and I'm just going to kind of roll along with that, but in actual fact I'm just kind of bored with this life and I just want to do something else, you know?
I'm 100% think so, man. If you would have asked, you know, at that time, my parents were proud of me. I was managing the largest retail bank in the US. I'd gotten promoted a few times. My boss was proud of me. I mean, looking from the outside in, I think people would have said, yeah, Ty's got, they got a nice house. He drives a nice car. He's got a good cushy job. He doesn't have to work that hard. You know, he's got a great life, right? But I knew there was something deeper inside me, you know? And I think a lot of men especially crave that. Like I needed challenge. I needed something to push me. I needed, you know, ultimately what that was, what it started for me was the gym and physical things, right? But I think in our society now, I mean, dude, I could push a button right now and have any food I want delivered to my doorstep in 20 minutes. You know, I can go down and we don't have TV for 3 years, but if I did, I could turn on and have any kind of channel or any kind of show come on, right? And I think I fell into that trap and that lie that a lot of guys do, is we seek comfort. And well, I got a comfortable life. I'm comfortable, but dude, I was comfortable for a few years. And after being comfortable for a few years, I will never go back to being comfortable again, because I was dying inside every single day.
Yeah. It's kind of like it's interesting, isn't it? It's like the death of, there's kind of like two soul deaths that you can experience. And one is like the kind of death of yourself through actually being like stuck in a position where you're not actually going forward and you're not actually going backwards. In fact, you're probably going backwards more than you're going forwards, just kind of stuck there. It's like the pain of growth versus the pain of just standing still. And I think it's almost as if for a lot of guys, the pain of standing still becomes so great in the end that you've just got, you've not got any choice but to start moving in a different direction, you know?
That's how I felt for sure, man. I really, you know, when it, if you would talk to my wife about kind of how I was day in and day out at that time, it was always like, I got to start something. I'm going to start this thing, or I'm going to do this thing. And I was kind of out there looking for these different ideas, these different challenges. But again, I think everybody kind of told, well, dude, you know, you got a great job. What are you complaining for? And then that guilt sort of plays into that too, where you think maybe I should just be happy. You know, everybody else around me seems happy, but now that I think I've got this gift of kind of, you know, engaging with 80,000+ people on Twitter every day and getting to know men and coach men. And I know you've had this experience. We've talked a little off platform about it, but most of the guys who just say, I'm fine, aren't really fine, man. You know, until you seek at something bigger than yourself, until you really go after something that you're really passionate about, you're just not alive in all these ways, man. And I think, you know, my wife would tell you now, my kids would say now that, like, just seeing me wake up out of bed, man, I'm excited for every day. I can't wait to take on the challenges and go get it. And yeah, there's still opportunity challenges all the time, right? Every day is hard, right? But you know, just when you're kind of going at those things you're passionate about, even if it's starting small at a side hustle or whatever, I'm not saying you need to quit your job today or whatever, but just working on things you're passionate about instead of zoning out to TV every night for 2-3 hours, what I was doing, and drinking beer, man, just start reading, start taking notes, start journaling, start, you know, start studying, start learning, just start to activate your mind and to see what you are kind of passionate about and want to go towards.
Yeah. Kind of stretch yourself a little bit. And it seems as if a lot of guys, I think now are also kind of like a round peg trying to fit in a square hole, in the sense that kind of society has bashed them into this kind of square hole for so long. And it's not until you kind of start hanging out with other round pegs that you realize, hang on a minute, there's other guys that are kind of a little bit like me and think a little bit like me and are interested and inquisitive. But the guys that I'm kind of hanging out with over here, they're just not really too interested in that. But the thing is I've known those guys. Hey, they're my buddies. I've known them for like decades. But I feel different to them, but I don't know who I should hang out with. And it's jumping from one tribe to another, I think, is often painful for guys, isn't it, to go through.
Very much so, man. I mean, I remember having kind of a hard talk with a few of my buddies when I really turned that corner and I decided I'm not going to be drinking 3-4 days a week. I'm getting up every day and going to the gym. Like I'm going to do some of these things that I know I need to be doing, and I'm going to do them whether I feel like it or not, you know? And you know, I got some pushback from a couple of the buddies in our group chat. Oh, you think you're too good to meet us at the bar? This, you know, just kind of little subtle jabs here and there. And you know, I invited them to the gym with me. I invited them to meet me and my kids at the park. And some of them definitely took me up on that. And that's been cool to see a lot of my friends kind of journey with me. But there's definitely going to be some guys you're just going to have to leave behind, right? I mean, one of my best friends from, you know, from high school, we were friends for 17 years, man. And I haven't spoken to him in a couple of years. And when COVID hit and the elections and all these things, he just got obsessed with these things, right? And like, I just couldn't, I don't know, man, I'm going in this way, he's going in this way. I had many hard talks with him, kind of telling him like, bro, I love you, but I ain't going to put up with this negativity, constant fear monger. I'm just not going to put up with it, you know? And let's talk about our kids and our family and our mission and our health and our life and our faith and all these other things, you know? And after the, you know, many, many times, I just decided my peace and my mental health is worth it, and had to kind of almost break up with him in a way, man, which is weird to say. But I think you have to be so obsessed with your own peace and kind of love yourself enough to give yourself permission to say, I'm kind of only going to allow people in my sphere that are positive for me, right? And I want to be positive around everybody else that's in there too. But you got to be really intentional about seeking that out, I think.
Yeah, and it's funny you should say that, actually, because while you were saying that, I had a really interesting insight, in the sense that some of the people that I speak to, like, not necessarily face to face, but kind of online, I spread out all over the country. But as you were saying that, I'm thinking to myself, I would probably much rather spend 2 or 3 hours driving to go and see someone that is going to be impactful and be on a different level, than drive like 2 to 3 minutes to see someone that's kind of going to get me down and, you know, make me feel shit about myself. And do you know what I mean? So there 100%. Is. You have to kind of maybe go further to nurture those kinds of relationships, particularly if you're going to do it in person as well.
Yeah, I think in person it's harder. It's such a gift and a privilege to be alive right now. I think this a lot of times because, you know, just the fact that we're chatting thousands and thousands of miles away or whatever we are, you know, is a gift. And I've been able to connect with you and guys all over the country and the world who are very like-minded and who do want to grow and who do want to push themselves, you know, whether that be physically in their faith, financially, as better husbands, as better dads, right? Like, you can find community in this. The thing is, it just doesn't happen automatically. You have to go seek it. And I think that's what I found is I had this very victim mindset, you know, back 5, 6, 8 years ago of just, well, these are the people I work with. I'm just kind of stuck here. I'm just kind of trapped, right? Well, if you were to look at my Twitter feed back then, as I'll just use an example, dude, I was following like Hillary Clinton, you know, like following you know, all these, I can't even think of politicians now because I haven't followed this stuff in so many years, but I'm following these politicians, these poisonous thoughts are just coming. All these people are fighting and I'm reading the comments and everything's negative all the time. And like, it's no wonder I was negative. I'm consuming this stuff all day. Then I'm going to an office. I'm hearing other people complain all day. Well, it's no wonder the fruit of my life then is going to be very negative, right? And so I had to get super intentional about creating that environment, going through and unfollowing all this junk that's just, you know, noise and distractions, and really not follow champions like you, like Zach Hommel, like Zuby, like, you know, a lot of these great men that I get to learn from and interact with now every single day. And what that has done for my life over the last few years, I mean, I would pay $1,000 a month to be on Twitter. Like if I never made a penny from it, I couldn't have a business from it like I do. But if I just had to pay $1,000 a month to get to engage and hear your thoughts and Zuby's thoughts and Zach and Dan Go and all these great men, it's worth it to me. It has literally leveled my life up so much. There's times where I'll see a tweet and I'll just write it in my journal. And then that night I'll expand on that thought and then I'll maybe talk to the guy who put the tweet out. What was your thought behind it? You know, and it's such a cheat code to level up your life, to be able to talk to some of the smartest people in the world every single day. Mm. But again, that doesn't just happen by accident. Like, Twitter's not going to recommend that you follow these people. They're going to recommend freaking, you know, these famous people that are shouting nonsense all day to distract you from what your real mission is, you know?
Yeah. There's a deliberate intentionality around it, isn't there? And I think you do notice that with a lot of guys, is they're deliberately seeking out those relationships, they're deliberately nurturing those connections that are going to move them forward rather than drive them backwards. And I think as well, when you're in that kind of mindset of, let's call it the pop culture mindset. When you're in that mindset, I think that for guys, I think we can lean towards finding ourselves kind of quite hubristic and arrogant as well. Like, you know, we don't need to know anything. We know what there is to know about life, and you know, we don't need to learn from anyone because we did a college degree and we've done full-time education. That's it. We know what we need to know. And I think it's kind of quite dangerous in a sense, because some of the most wise people are the people that know, they know what they don't know, and they know that they will never know everything, and they know that they won't stop learning until they stop drawing breath. And when you get into that mindset of realizing that, then I think that's kind of quite a turning point towards wisdom in your life, because up until that point, you just think, And I've been guilty of it in the past. And I know when I look around me, I can see certain individuals, you know, within our like extended family and husbands of wife's friends and stuff like that. You can see guys that are kind of like they're just walking with hubristic arrogance, I would say, until something happens to them, and then they're like, oh shit, that brought my life down to the ground with a massive bump, and I'm not quite as hubristic, arrogant, and know-it-all as I used to be, you know.
Yeah, life has a good way of humbling us, man. And I think, you know, the more that I learn, and that's why, again, I go back to, I just love Twitter and reading and all the things. Like, the more I learn, the more I realize, man, I just don't know anything about anything, you know. Like, it's a cool thing, because, you know, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, I would have said that answer. Well, dude, I went back to college. I got a 4.0. I'm a pretty smart guy. And now if you ask me, I'm like, dude, I don't really know anything. I need to keep learning, you know, like I just don't really know much about anything, you know.
What do you think have been some of your biggest wake up calls in life just on that topic?
I mean, the biggest one for me for sure was, I think it was two parts. So I was a professional poker player for about 9 years and did really well. I dropped out of college at 20 and just realized that, like, I'm a very addictive personality. And I realized I had a good strategic mind for this game. I hired a really good coach, studied just 10 hours a day for a few months and got really good at poker. So I was making hundreds of thousands, $1 million playing poker in my early 20s, just kind of traveling the world, living this kind of fun lifestyle. I got married in that time to a gal that I met in Vegas who's from my hometown, but we were together about 3 years and things were, you know, we just had a fun kind of like a party-ish life. So we always threw parties. We were the first one of our friends in our 20s to have a lot of money, you know? So we were always kind of like hosting parties. And I remember being out in Vegas and just getting a call when I was like 25, 26. And she's like, look, I'm cheating on you and I'm leaving you, you know? And so that was before that, I think I felt invincible. Like, well, I even remember like saying to people like, dude, I have a lot of money and I have the means to make a lot of money. So like any problem I have, I can throw money at it. I can buy it, you know? And that was kind of the first wake up call for me that there's a lot of things in life that money doesn't solve, you know, and that just because you're well off financially, and I think you look around, you see a lot of these celebrities, a lot of these like really rich people that, yeah, you know, that's kind of a lie. I think society tells us, well, if you make a lot of money, or even for dads, you know, I bought this lie when I first started, if you get promoted and make money and you know, give to your family, that's all you need to do. Right. And I think I had that mindset in my first marriage. Well, dude, I'm not going to communicate and talk about anything deep. I'm just going to go play poker, do what I love and send some money over, you know, we'll go to the next party. Like, and I think that was a real gut check for me that there's a lot more to life than just it kind of being a game and you trying to make money. Right. And so then I kind of struggled for the next couple of years. And then the biggest turning point, I'd say that second part is I met my now wife, Annie, who is she's PhD from Purdue, engineer, like just one of the smartest people ever. And, you know, when I met her, she's making, you know, peanuts because she, you know, she's getting recruited by these companies to make tons of money. And she followed her passion and her mission and she founded a nonprofit. And, you know, when I say peanuts, I mean peanuts, you know, like it, but she's so happy and so content. And I signed up to go on a mission trip with her, partly because I thought she was hot, but partly because I wanted to go, you know, when I was in Swaziland, South Africa, and I met these kids who literally sleep in mud huts and literally have no toys. They have to walk miles to get fresh water that day. Food is very scarce. There's no medicine. There's no cars. There's no anything like this, but they were the happiest kids I'd ever met. And I remember just playing, kicking balls with them in fields and like going home. I remember that first night there, I came back to Annie. And I sobbed, man. I cried. And I just said, they got life figured out. And I don't, you know, that they don't walk, they run, they don't talk, they sing, you know, like these kids have something in them that I don't have. It's some kind of joy, you know? And I remember saying to her, I'm going to find out what that is. I want that, you know? And I've been back now 6 or 7 times. And, you know, the funny thing is I was like this very arrogant American going to go there to help these kids, you know, like, and what they taught me, I think, was that the best things in life are free and that you can't just focus on stuff and material things. And, you know, if I were to give you a tour of our house now, man, it's like people ask all the time, like, are you guys moving out? Like, nah, man, we just like, we got our table at Goodwill, bro. We don't care. You know, like, we just don't value stuff at all the way that I think most other people do. We value time. We value relationships. We value a lot of these other things. And I think those kids taught me that. And that was a very big pivotal point in my life.
There's a really interesting book that I read years and years ago called Affluenza. I don't know whether you can still get it, but it was really interesting because it was a book and they'd basically studied, you know, different areas of the world. And they found that some of the areas of the world that in theory should are not kind of as westernized and not have not got the material wealth and the things that we have in the kind of West, people were happier, more content, more grateful for the lives they had. And it was this interesting kind of trend that kind of went across this book in terms of how much more people were satisfied. And interestingly as well, some of the countries where I think that they were becoming more and more westernized, the level of happiness went down. So it's kind of there's something to all of this stuff. And I think that it's interesting when you kind of it's interesting when I see the kind of the notion of kind of privilege knocked about on Twitter And it's kind of a loaded word, that, because obviously the social justice movements pick up on it. But kind of what's interesting, like, to your point about no matter how much money you've got, and I often have this kind of conversation with people when they talk about privilege, like you can be a really reasonably wealthy person and still have really bad stuff happen to you that's completely out of your control, that no medicine exists to solve. You know, like, you could be and we see this with kind of quite famous people, and people will often go, oh well, that's okay, that guy is a premiership footballer and he earns x amount of money, or he's a baseball player, or he's a, you know, yeah, that, okay, that doesn't change the fact that his wife is dying of cancer and he's going to now have to father his children without his wife. Right. You know, that doesn't change whether or not, like, you could say, yo, okay, well, he can hire in help and he can do this. But the emotional and mental pain of losing your wife, that doesn't change whether you're a multimillionaire or whether you've got no money at all. Like, that's still the same experience that you go through. And I think this kind of stuff, kind of, when we talk about privilege, I think that stuff, that kind of gets lost, that whole discussion about you can endure really difficult stuff no matter who you are. And you can also endure very difficult stuff no matter where you are on the socioeconomic ladder, you know?
Yeah, definitely agree. Do you know who Jim Carrey is? Famous actor?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has this really good quote that he's kind of disappeared like 5 years ago. And I remember him making this quote, and he's like, I wish that every human could become super rich, super famous, and achieve like everything that they're told makes them happy, so that they could realize like it doesn't, that's not what makes you happy, you know? And it really, he went on to write about it, and it was a pretty brilliant piece. And, you know, there's other studies I think that have shown when you go above kind of that, what is it? Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Once you kind of get above that second tier and you're, you know, you have running water, you have a lot of the things that everybody here is going to be watching this has, right? Once you get, I think the study showed it was like $85,000 a year in the States. Once you made above that, your happiness level, like if you made below that, your happiness level was tough because you struggled for basic things, right? Which is harder. But once your basic needs were met, all these studies showed that your happiness didn't keep going up as you made more money. In fact, it started to slope down, as Biggie Smalls would say, more money, more problems sometimes, you know? So yeah. I thought it was a very interesting study.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, as well, is when you see the amount of people as well, you know, famous people as well, that have got serious, you know, very serious addiction and mental health problems, that kind of underlines, you know, we don't even need to go into the amount of, you know, very famous people and well-off people that struggle with a lot of this stuff. Not to say that that's any indication of what kind of people they are, but there does seem to be a lot of people that you would think they've got all the money to be happy in the world. And it's just like, clearly, and they're not. Point,
yeah, what you said before, I think a lot of people look at those people then on the outside and say, well, how could they struggle? They can hire these things. They can get the, you know, but I think that just goes to prove the point further that money doesn't equate to happiness. And, you know, I'll say two cool things I've gotten to do off Twitter here in the last few months, man, is, you know, one, I had I'm not going to say his name, but a billionaire that was following me on Twitter for the last couple of years. And so he reached out in the DMs and said, hey, man, you know, I'd love to hop on a Zoom call with you sometime. You just seem like a really happy, positive guy. You know, I just kind of love to pick your brain. I'm like, well, yeah, let's go, you know. And so I've kind of become friends with this guy, and we've exchanged, you know, stuff back and forth here, messages a few times. And, you know, one of the things that was really eye opening to me that he told me is, he said, Ty, you know, he's like, I'm almost 50. I'm worth $1.2 billion. I've got 5 homes, every toy you could ever imagine. I got chefs that follow me. I got, you know, all this stuff that everybody says. And he said, I'm really stressed out day to day. I really struggle with gratitude. I really struggle to be present. I really struggle to ever really live in the moment. It's always that next thing. And he's like, even the fact that I'm worth $1.2 billion, he goes, I'm going to laugh when I tell you this. But he's like, I feel poor because a lot of my friends are worth $8 billion, $10 billion, $12 billion, you know? And he's like, I'm always comparing. And so that was a really, you know, getting the chance to chat back and forth with him several times was very eye-opening too, to see, man, it's not really all it's cracked up to be, right? And I remember just asking him very plainly a couple times, well, like, why do you still work then? You know, like, this guy's grinding 12 hours a day still. And I'm like, you know, your kids you're taken care of. What's, you know, why don't you do things you enjoy or you're passionate about? He's just like, it's all I've ever known. You know, I feel like I can't unlearn it at this point. I'm just kind of trapped in this almost machine of what other people expect of me and what everybody else needs me for. And he almost felt sort of like a slave to that in a way. And I thought that was really interesting to kind of get to talk to a guy in that, what you would say is a privileged position, right? To be a billionaire. And it was really amazing and eye-opening to me again to show, like, to be honest, I don't really want to scale my business right now. I make a decent amount. We live a good life. I don't really want to have a bunch of employees under me. I don't really want to have a bunch of meetings and a bunch of these things that I don't want to do. Right. And I think that just kind of underlined for me what's really important.
Yeah. And I think as well, you can, from what you're talking about there, you can see how there is like an interplay between identity and the purpose. Like, I think a lot of people's identity is wrapped up in what their value is to other people rather than what their value is to themselves. And that is kind of the corporate trap for a lot of guys, isn't it? That they get the corporate job. It may earn them kind of six figures or whatever it's going to be. But the problem is if they then want to get out of that, it's kind of a quantum leap to try and get out of that. And because there's so much of their identity and their purpose in life is tied to this kind of juggernaut that is like a runaway train that they're never going to catch up with and get to the front of, you know?
Yes, exactly, man. And then, you know, if I flip that around and I say one of my favorite clients here in the last couple years was this guy named Tyler. And he jokes all the time that he paid me for 4 months to coach him so that he could make 50K a year less, right? we just, you know, I would ask him these questions. Like, he was taking, he's a CPA, and he was taking on so many clients and so much work that his physical health was suffering, his marriage and his relationships with his kids. And again, he was working these long days and didn't really feel present. And I remember just asking him, you know, you got money in the bank. Like, what does the extra 50K a year mean to you? And he's like, nothing. To be honest, I the difference between making 240 and 190, we still live the same life. I just don't buy 50K worth of extra stock at the end of the year, you know, but we still live a great life, comfortable life. And I'm like, okay, well, what is not taking on 10 or 12 of these clients? What does that do for your day-to-day life? And he's like, I get to run every day and go to the gym. I get to spend an extra hour with my family and make sure I'm home for dinner every night. I get to take my kids to the park and play. And I'm like, well, at the end of your life, what do you think is going to matter more? You know? And when we started to really work through this stuff, I mean, it was a no-brainer for him. He just started cutting clients left and right and got to a point now where, you know, he's like, dude, he works 5-6 hours a day, focused work 5-6 hours a day. But he's got the rest of his time where he doesn't feel like a slave, like he's always like that runaway train he can't catch up to. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you get caught up, you add more clients and then you try and get to 300K a year and then 500K a year and then a million, you know, and it's like that stuff never ends. And I feel like for him now, when I chat with him, we joke all the time that he's talking to a lot of his other CPA friends, telling him, dude, it's a scam. Like, get to a point where you're living a good, comfortable life, but then, you know, take ownership of your health and make sure you got a great marriage and make sure you're a great dad before you go chasing other clients and stuff, you know? And so it's cool to see the contrast of those two. And everybody looking on the outside would say, oh man, that billionaire with the 5 mansions, he's got to be so much happier than this CPA who's, you know, but when I get to talk to them both and hear day-to-day happiness, it's not close. You know, my buddy Tyler is the CPA is just infinitely happier. I can't talk to this guy now without him sending me a voicemail. Dude, I just had a date with my wife. He's about to qualify for the Boston Marathon, which is like the biggest race here in the country. He's completely revamped his whole life in the last couple of years, just from kind of unplugging from the matrix and realizing I don't need to keep chasing more dollars when I got enough dollars. Now, there's probably a time, right? Like, that you need to grind and you need to make sure you get those basic needs met. But I think for a lot of us, when we get to that in our 30s and our 40s, it's okay to sort of say we don't need to keep upping our lifestyle. Like, my life isn't going to be better whether I drive a freaking Lexus or a Toyota, to be perfectly honest. Like, I'm going to be happier with just more time to spend with my family. And I think it's a lie they sell us that you keep upgrading, you keep upgrading. Well, that just kind of keeps you plugged into that matrix you can never escape.
Yeah, you're right. And you're right in terms of saying, you know, what when we get to the end of it, there's been really kind of famous, there's a few books that have been written on, I think there's one by a lady who works, you know, with end of life care, and like the top things that people say that they'd wish they spent more time doing during their lives. And what it's usually spending time with their family, not listening to what other people said, pursuing their dreams. And like, there's like 5 or 6 main ones that like, and you just like, when you read them, you're like, maybe I should make some changes. For most people, it's like, I think I need to make some changes here, sort of thing. So, because no one ever said, I wish I'd spent more time at the office, or I'd wish I'd spent more time dealing with, you know, pain in the ass, people, or, you know, it's just those things are never going to come up on those, you know, those deathbed wishes, are they?
I'm just going to jump into the conversation quickly here. I'm pretty excited to let you know that I have a Discord community running alongside this podcast exclusively for dads called the Guild of Dads Brotherhood. If you are a dad into self-improvement and you want to get the accountability, camaraderie and resources of being amongst others on your dad-improvement journey, then this is for you. It's an insane one-off £5 to join, and you also get a copy of my book, The Dad Blueprint, along with a bonus called Fix Yourself, Fix Your Marriage, and a stack of other tools, resources to get you started on your dad improvement journey. Want in? Head on over to dadblueprintbook.com and jump on in today.
That, to be honest, Joe, that's why we canceled TV a little over 3 years ago, man. It's, I got to volunteer pre-COVID. I was volunteering every week or every month. We were going and doing at end of care, like these nursing home kind of place here and where we lived. And so we got to build relationships with a lot of these people. And I heard this over and over again, exactly what you just said. You know, I think back, my favorite lady's name there was Betty. And she just told me, you know, Tyler, she's 91 now. So she knows she's in her final season, right? And she's still really with it, but her body's breaking down. She said, you know, back about 60 years ago, she said, I'd always quilt these beautiful blankets for all my friends. And all my friends used to tell me all the time, you know, Betty, you ought to start a business around that. She said, I always knew that I should have done that. And I wanted to try it. And I never did. And, you know, and I would, and then I'd go from person to person. I'd hear that. Nobody ever told me, man, I wish I would have watched the 14th season of the Kardashians so I could figure out what happened. Then nobody told me that, oh, I wish I would have watched more Monday Night Football. Oh, I wish I would have, you know. It was always those things you're talking about, those chances they didn't take, those dreams they didn't pursue. I wish I would have been home with my kids more. You know, your kids are only young once. And it's so if you're not prioritizing those things that really, really matter, then yeah, I think it's time to take a hard look and say, okay, how can I do that? You know, how can I make sure I get to the end of my life and just smile with my boots on and say, man, you know, I poured into the things that mattered.
Yeah, I love that. I do love that. Now, a lot of your content shows off your lovely young family, and you've got a daughter, and I think, is it two boys? Is it
two boys now? Yeah, we've had seven kids in and out because we did foster care, but we've adopted two boys now. Yeah,
yeah, and that's been a journey in itself, and I can see that that's kind of been a journey in and of itself, because you've got. Well, you tell the story rather than me tell the story. You've got three kids. What's the story behind the three kids that you've got in your family?
So yeah, my daughter Tinley, my little angel, man, she just turned seven, and we had her. Doctors told my wife when we got married, she had very low egg count and wasn't sure if we'd ever get pregnant. On our honeymoon, we got pregnant. So it turns out that was not the case, but it was a very tough pregnancy on my wife. It was kind of touch and go there for a couple months. Baby wasn't growing well about 5 or 6 months in, and it was not an easy pregnancy by any means. So when that was done, my wife said, I want that to be our last biological. I don't want to go through that again. Would you be open to adopting, foster care and adopting? Like any good husband, I said, absolutely not. No. But then I came around, you know, about a year or so later, I started really thinking about it, praying about it. It was actually one day at the gym. I was listening to this sermon that one of my favorite preachers was preaching. It was about, I don't know, something about it. It started tugging at my heart. And so I started talking to her about it. And I said, okay, I'm open to doing this. So a few years ago, we just started fostering. We had seven kids come into our home, all under two. And we basically just gave them as great a life as we could, helped them out. And five of them were reunited back home. Some of them, their parents were just down on their luck. Some of them, you know, their parents were unable to take care of them, but they had an aunt or an uncle step up who was. Our two sons didn't have anybody who could step up and take care of them. So we were very honored. And it's our greatest privilege and joy, man, to adopt both of them last year. We've had them both since they're about 2.5, 3 months old. Kingston's our big guy. He just turned two last month. And Tyson, his little brother, is right behind him. He'll turn two here next month. And so it's just been a really fun and great joy. We closed our license here about a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. We reunited one. We had 3 1-year-olds actually at the same time for about 6 months. And that was wild. Wow. I mean, just talk about not
for punishment.
Dude, it was something hard. And to be honest, reuniting her back to a situation that wasn't great was really, really hard mentally on my wife and I. And so we decided at that time, hey, we've taken two kids out of the system. We've got to help a lot more. And at this time in our life, we're just going to focus on our family. So now we've got the three kiddos. And that was a big reason for me wanting to leave corporate too. You know, before this, I was at the park for a couple hours with the boys. That's a big staple every day, man. Take them to the park for a couple hours, let them roam, let them explore. And I feel so lucky I get to do that every single day with my boys now.
Yeah. And they're into everything as well. I can see that they're kind of, I can see from what you post, there is never a dull moment in your house. That is for sure.
Yeah, man, they're wild. I mean, Tyson's just so wild. He's, you know, just into everything. We joke that he's going to be like a Navy SEAL or something. This kid just doesn't have any fear. And it's like, at the end of the day, my wife and I always give each other a big hug and we'll be like, we kept them alive again today. We did it. know, they're just determined to like try and kill themselves every day, man. Jumping off this or, you know, they're in swimming lessons now. So they're really liking swimming. But, you know, before the swimming lessons, they were always gravitating towards the pool. They're just, they're wild, wild boys, but it is so fun. And it's such a gift to kind of be able to see that spirit. You know, my daughter is, she's a go-getter too, man. She'll go hike 8 miles with me on a weekend. She's a really go-getter, but she can sit still, you know, and focus on things. My boys, man, it is, you got 2 or 3 minutes with this thing and then we're on to the next thing. And so parenting boys and girls has been different. It's been eye-opening, but it's super fun. And it's just the greatest thing ever, man, as they grow and get more interactive.
Yeah. And you mentioned, I saw a little while back on Twitter, you mentioned that, because obviously they look different to your daughter, and you get comments and you've had encountered prejudice in the past and stuff. To overcome that as well is kind of like, you know, with all that you're doing for the boys and giving them a home and giving them a family, that's got to be challenging. And I know it's probably something difficult to talk about, but you know, I'm always in awe of what you do, and like to overcome that and some of the comments that you do get is pretty impressive, man.
I appreciate it, man. I give a lot of credit to my faith and my wife in that. We talk about that a lot. And to be really honest, I won't tell my kids' stories. It'll be theirs to tell someday. But when you really realize what they had to go through to even get into this world, and, you know, like when my daughter was born, man, there was a dozen people there ready to celebrate, welcome her into the world. My wife was on every prenatal thing, going to the breathing classes, the yoga classes, you know. But a lot of these kids that grow up in the system, man, they it's not like that, right? Like some of them are born and then mom's on drugs and goes to jail and there's no dad. And then they're sitting in an incubator for a month. Nobody's ever held them. Nobody's touched them. Nobody's, you know. And so when you understand that there's kids that come into the world like that, it really softens your heart. Even when you see adults that may be projecting things and yelling negative or racist comments at you, you kind of know, like, man, if they just had a mom and a dad that loved them and kind of showed them a better way, they probably wouldn't be in this spot. So you start to feel a lot of empathy for people. And I think that's probably been one of the coolest changes in my life going through this foster care journey and this adoption journey, is just to see people for who they are, man. We're all humans. We're all trying to figure this thing out as we go, right? And so somebody that's going to come and project something really negative and yell at my family about this, I shouldn't be adopting a Black child, an Asian child, fill in the blank, because I'm white, that really doesn't have anything to do with me. You know, like, I'm going to love this kid. They're going to be a part of my family. Whatever issues they have, I hope they figure them out. You know, I mean, people are people. And if, you know, I can get into all the statistics and things like that. Well, if we don't adopt them, then, you know, 81% of kids that end up through the system end up incarcerated in the state. So do you think it'd be better with my family, or do you think it would be better that, you know? And so I'm confident in the decision. I know that the boys will grow up and I think be grateful. And we've reached out to their parents many times. We'll always try and do that to let them be a part of their lives any way they want. But yeah, some of those negative, hateful things, man, I think it's just a projection of them rather than has anything to do with me, you know?
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And I think the thing is as well, is like, it's interesting what you say, because we both know the figures on fatherlessness. And they stretch across the Atlantic. We know what the kind of stats are for fatherlessness. So there's almost no debating those stats now. But I think the thing is, you're right. Like what you've been through with the boys, I think underlines quite a good point, and it comes up quite a lot in the discussions I have on this podcast, and that is around the notion that of how we are brought up and what we are taught. I was talking to Adam Lane Smith a few episodes back, so that's going to be coming up shortly. In fact, when this comes out, it will have come out just before. And when you begin to realize that the stuff that happens when we're kind of young has an impact on how we behave when we're older, you kind of realize that most of the people that you speak to kind of in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, even older than that, a lot of what they're saying is stuff that is kind of been planted into their little minds when they were kids. And they're just kind of repeating the same stuff over and over again. So, and it's probably been repeated by their dads or their mums. And it's kind of, so it's kind of A, it's skipping a generation. B, like you say, it's not about you. It's about them. And it's just a very interesting dynamic. And when you realize that, you kind of like, actually, I kind of feel sorry for you, dude. Not like,
yeah, the thought of like attacking somebody like that back who's already hurting and broken, like, let's be honest, nobody mentally healthy, Joe. Me and you don't talk to one person that's like healthy and winning that wakes up and says, I'm going to go on Twitter and find people I disagree with and shout at. Like, that's, you're just not a healthy person if you're doing that. And so I don't even want to add fuel to the fire by yelling back at some of these people. I mean, to be honest, I try and pray for some of these people. When it gets really bad, I do block them because, again, I'm going to guard my peace. But yeah, I do think, you know, another thing it's taught me is it is a learned behavior, as you alluded to. Like, look, me and my wife joke, it's been a United Nations in our house, man. We've literally had we've had black kids, we've had white kids, we've had Asian kids, we've had Mexican kids, and none of the kids ever think, well, I'm not playing with him because he looks different than me. They just play together. Like, it's whatever they learn. And so some of these adults that might come on and say, oh, you're polluting your daughter by letting her grow up around these different races, they were just taught that by a racist parent who was probably taught that by a racist grandparent. And I feel a big level of empathy. And I invite these people all the time. I'm like, dude, come hang out with my family one day. If you're ever in Vegas, dude, just spend a day with me and my kids at the park and tell me if you still think all black people are X, all Mexican people are X. It's like, dude, people are people. There's some good ones, there's some bad ones. Most of us are works in progress. We're trying to get there. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of an ignorant comment that I think, yeah, they just need to be shown a better way. And that's probably, I think, my biggest role on Twitter that I love is just to be a light every day. And when people come at me with hate, man, I just try and give them back some kindness and love. And there's so many times when I'll get these really negative comments, man. I'll even just shoot these people DMs. Hey, brother, whatever's hurting you, I hope you heal from it. I hope you end up having a great day, man. You know, there's no need to attack people. And I just hope you have a great day, man. You know, go do something that is positive for you today. You know, I just try and encourage people. And I've seen many people flip that script, man. They'll start shouting. But once you're kind of calm at them and, hey, man, I really do hope you have a great life. We don't have to agree on everything, but I just hope you have a great day. Yeah, it's really hard to argue back at that and stay really high emotionally. When you kind of stay down here, they just look really foolish if they stay up here really emotionally. And so a lot of people do just tend to come back down and they'll talk to you like a human being for a little bit, or they won't, and you just block them, you know, but either way, you kind of win.
What's kind of quite funny sometimes is when I've noticed before is like people that start off often as your fiercest critics and the ones that are kind of quite angry with you, all of a sudden, they kind of warm to you and stuff. And I think it's often because some of the stuff that you're saying is triggering parts of them they don't like, but then they're like, actually he's triggered so many of these things inside me that I don't like, that he's shit, he's got a point. You know, I can't wriggle out of this anymore. He's got a point about what I'm going through and what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing, you know. So and it's interesting when that kind of happens and you see that dynamic shift. You know, I've had guys that message me before and they're just like, you know, they may have found it difficult to hear what I'm saying to begin with. And then they're kind of like, actually, no, you're right. When you get them in, you know, when you get them in on a kind of one-to-one call or a message or whatever and stuff, it's just completely different, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. The funniest DM I ever got was a guy telling me, I've unfollowed you like 15 times, but I know what you're saying I need to hear, but it's just, I can't stand your positivity some days and I'm determined to be negative, but I always come back, you know. I ended up chatting with that guy quite a bit, man. And, you know, some cool things happened in his life over the last couple of years where I convinced him to get away from a lot of this negativity, right? Like, you know, you're feeding both of the dog, the negative and the positive one. Like, why don't you just choose to feed the positive one and see what happens, you know? And so I've seen a lot of miracles happen every day on social media. And I'm grateful to get to connect with as many people as I do to just get to, and again, I don't say my way's right ever. I think my way's right for me, but you know, I'm going to challenge some of the ways you think. And I hope my friends challenge the way I think a lot. And that's how we learn. That's how we grow. I mean, my friends will say things to me that I probably don't like to hear sometimes. Right. But Sometimes I need them, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to hear it, but I need to hear it.
Well, today was the first day I lifted in like 8 days, man. And that's a direct result of Zach Hommel telling me, bro, you need to rest. Like, your body, your mind, you need to rest. I'm like, shut up, Zach. I want to go, you know, I want to keep going. I want to keep pushing, but I needed a good buddy in my corner to kind of convince me, yeah, man, every 6-8 months, you just need to unplug for a week. Mm. You know, you just need to just relax a little bit, go for longer walks, and you don't need to be on the grind all the time, you know?
Yeah. And have you just come off 75 hard as well?
Yeah. So interesting story, man. Yeah. I went to day 70 and I intentionally made the decision to quit at day 70, man. My body was just broke. I was going to bed at 7:45 every night, not really connecting with my wife the last 3 or 4 days of that. And I mean, I had to admit to my wife, I'm not even a good dad these last couple of days. I'm just, it's all about getting this stuff done in the checklist. And I said, you know what? You know, I made it 70 days. The challenge was good for me in that sense. Part of me feels like kind of an inner B word for quitting those last five. But when it's no longer serving me, I'm going to go ahead and make the decision to just say it's not serving me at this point. And that's took the 8 days off and then back today, hop back in the gym, hop back on everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went to day 70, man. So
it's interesting. It's a really interesting thing, 75 hard, because it's really popular. I did it. I think I got 17 days in and then forgot to take a progress picture or something ridiculous like that. And I was just like, all right, okay. So why am I actually doing this? And I think that is the question that comes to most people. And listen, it's a good way to keep you disciplined and prove to you that you can do something for a period of time. Mm. But how much of it is Priscilla PR? It's become like a monster in and of itself, isn't it? As a thing that a lot of people do. So without denigrating your 70-day effort, Mr. Todd, at all.
I've heard so many guys that have made it to like 50 plus and forgot to take that progress pick, and then they're just like deleted the app. They're like, I'm never doing this again. Yeah, I think it's, you know, everything in moderation, like including moderation. And sometimes you do just need to be super locked in and go for it, you know? But I'm really big, like once a month I do a self audit where I take about 30 minutes of quiet time by myself. And I just kind of ask myself some hard questions. How am I doing fitness? How am I doing on faith? How am I doing on finances? How am I doing in my marriage, dad, all these things. And I journal about them and take notes and look back at the past month, set some new goals for that next month. So I've been doing this for, you know, 30 months or so. And one of the things I wrote early September before I made the decision to quit was, I'm miserable. You know, like, yeah, I'm shredded. My body looks good, but I don't feel good. My mind doesn't feel good. And you know, I just kind of had to ask myself those questions of, is it still serving me again? You know, like, again, my family hasn't had TV for 3 years, but I'll say, you know, I'm really like not anti-TV, but just during this season, we're not going to do it. My kids are young. I have full influence over them. I'm going to make them get outside. But let's say, you know, my boys are really into football or baseball, or I'll get TV in a few years and we'll watch games together. Maybe that'll be a thing, right? So what's working for you in one season might not in the next. And I think it's okay to kind of have some self-awareness and some sense to say, you know what, there's a time to buckle in, lock in and be super disciplined and like just crush everything. There's also a time to give yourself a little grace, rest a little bit and feel like you're okay with that too. It's finding that balance, I think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What do you think, what one thing do you think you struggle with that most people would be surprised by?
It's just got to be balance, man. You know, I work so hard at staying a balanced human, but I have a tendency to just get so addicted to anything I do. So like, I'll give you a funny example. Like a few months ago, a buddy from Twitter just hits me up and he's like, hey man, I'm going to be in Vegas and I'm playing pickleball. I've never played pickleball. He's like, I'll buy a couple paddles. I'll come by. I got courts right in my neighborhood. We went and played for like 3 hours. I literally came home and told my wife, like, dude, I'm going to play tomorrow. And the next day I'm going to join this league. I'm going to buy new paddles. I'm going to get lessons. Like, I'm going to be great at pickleball. And my wife just chuckles at this point because she's known me for 9 years now, and she knows this is just Tyler. He's on this phase, you know. But I always have to be mindful because I have such an addictive personality, and it can really serve me if I harness it and use it well. Like, you know, but it can have a tendency to take hold of my life. So that's why I do those monthly audits. That's why I check in with myself. I set goals a lot of weeks. I'm really open now communicating that with my wife, and I give her permission. I say, hey, if you see me going on one of these tangents, like, just call me out, just lovingly come approach me, and I'll laugh about it then, you know. Like, she started laughing about that night. She said, do you think you're kind of getting on one of those things? I said, absolutely. It's all I can think about. I'm watching it on YouTube. I'm like, I'm learning all the strategies, right? Like, so I think that's something that I will probably always struggle with my whole life. And I already see it in my daughter too. You know, she's 7, but when she gets into things, she's really into things. Like, she's gotten really into math, and she is doing math at a high school level, at freshman level, like multi-integer algebraic equations. And she's in second grade, but she's addicted to learning and getting better and telling everybody how great she is at math and showing her Nini and showing everybody, you know. And so I see a lot of those tendencies. I'm hoping that I can solve this and continue to get better at it so I can help my kids at it.
Yeah, that does make sense. It's interesting, actually. There's a so during the last few months, some stuff's been going on in within our home, and I saw a post, and it was about someone said something along the lines of, being someone with ADD or ADHD, this really kind of there's a few things that I do to kind of get through each day. What does everyone else do? And there was loads of comments below, and I was like, well, I've not got ADHD, so I don't really think that applies to me. And then I start reading the comments below, and I'm like, shit, that sounds familiar. That sounds familiar. And that sounds familiar. And I was like, oh no. And so I sort of, you do, with ADD, it's different to autism, but you do like a series of questionnaires. So I did a questionnaire. One comes out like 98%. No one comes out 97%. And then I sort of walked into my wife and said, I've got something to tell you. I was like, I think that I probably had ADHD most of my life. I'd probably more like ADD now, because it kind of like, but like, I was always told to shut up as a kid, to sit down, to be quiet, you know, all this kind of stuff. And just like, so anyway, I picked up, this is kind of digressing from the podcast bit, I found this book called The Drummer and the Mountain. It's really interesting. But what he talks about in this book is that before, like, agriculture, hunter-gatherers were like, they were kind of hunter types. So they were focused, they could hyper-focus on things very intently for a short period of time. They were very noise sensitive. They were very focused. What he says as well is that, like, hunters typically have a lower baseline level of dopamine, which means that they're kind of, which makes them good hunters, because they're looking for that hit, or, you know, they're looking for that hit by getting a hunt and getting a kill and stuff. But downside is you're not very well equipped to deal with the modern world, because you're kind of, you can get addicted and form habits quite easily. You can get sidetracked, and like a squirrel. Yeah, so whereas farmers are like, came after agriculture, so they can spend long periods of time doing monotonous stuff over and over again. They don't need that kind of that excitement and stuff and that. And it's just a really interesting book, and no doubt I'll share the link for you. And you knowing what a book man you are, you'll probably like devour it, but. But yeah. It's interesting that I think that the good thing about the book is he explains how you can kind of harness it to use as a power rather than something that is going to hold you back and hinder you. And there's little dietary stuff and that in there as well. So yeah, I've accidentally plugged the book on the podcast. It should be about you, but I just thought it interesting because I think some people think, oh yeah, it's really. My eldest daughter is autistic, so I don't, get me wrong, for everyone that's listening to this, I know the score when it comes to neurodiversity. But I also think that people can flip it a little bit and actually say, okay, this is part of me, but it's not, it's who I am, but it's not completely who I am. It's part of me, and I can harness this to do great things with it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's so powerful. We're just kind of the stories we tell ourselves in our mind, you know, for a little bit. And I agree with you, there's different spectrums of, you know, there's certainly some people that need to be on meds, and there's certainly some people that, you know, need that stuff to function. But I do think, you know, what diet and lifestyle, you could probably get half the people in the world off meds, like in 6 months, if they just fixed diet and lifestyle and applied a lot of these things. I mean, I was on anxiety meds, you know, 6 years ago, every single day. And I told myself I don't sleep well. I'm not a good sleeper, and I'm just an anxious person. That's who I am. Right. And I just, that's what I told myself for 30 some years. And I just kind of believed it until one day I kind of did what you just talked about and started saying, you know what? I have tendencies toward anxiety, but I'm not an anxious person. You know, like I can use these kind of things in other ways. Right. Well, I'm a prepared person when I care about the thing I'm prepared about. I can start to frame these things in my head in a different way as just sort of not looking at them negatively. Right. But even that ADD, man, I'm very ADD. Like, as I sit here and like, when you mention it, I'm tapping my foot, I'm always doing a bunch
rest
of things.
His leg.
Yeah. But it's like, I kind of think that's almost a strength, right? Like in a lot of the things I do now, you know, I'm able to harness that focus and really just devour that thing, you know, whatever that thing is I'm working on for a half hour at a time. And then boom, without missing a beat, I can hop onto that next thing. Then I can, boom, I can hop downstairs and be a great dad. Then boom, I can, you know, like I almost view it as a strength now, right? Whereas a decade ago, I would have said that's a big weakness of mine. But I think it's, again, it's the story you tell yourself in your head.
Yeah, that's a good point to finish on. Tyler, it's been an absolute privilege speaking to you today. As usual, your bundle of energy from start to finish, and it comes across in your writings and your content and what you put out. I appreciate you and the support you've given me, and you know, you've always been a champion of what I'm doing and stuff, particularly on Twitter and stuff. So I appreciate
it's a vital
that.
Mission, man, and I appreciate everything you put out to help dads and help fathers, help husbands. I mean, I, you know, we talk about those stats all day, right? But it's that, to me, that's what's going to save society. Across the Atlantic or not, it's kind of the same thing, right? Men need these other men and these strong communities. And I appreciate what you're putting out, brother. So keep doing it, man.
Where's the best place for guys to find out about you?
So you definitely come hit me up on Twitter, man. I'm at Ty Romper. That's TYROMPER. Been sharing on there every day for about 3 years. Don't have any plans to stop soon. And, you know, I'm on Instagram, the same name too. And YouTube, same name too. Just my name is Tyler Tote. And I'm starting to share multiple times a week now on YouTube as well. So that's been a fun thing too.
All right. Super, super. So there you have it, all the information. One last question I'm going to ask you before I send you on your way. Tyler, what is it in life that gives you meaning?
Man, impact. At this point in my life, it's just impact. And, you know, I have a deep personal faith that, you know, I'm a big fan of preach the gospel every day and speak seldom about it. So I'm not the kind of guy who's going to shout at you about the things you're doing wrong, or I'm doing these and you need to be doing these. But I really believe in a purpose bigger than myself. I believe it's no accident that I'm put here at this time, that you're put here at this time. I think we're all given very individual gifts, and it's up to all of us to discover what those are and go use those to impact as many people as we can. And I think that's kind of, you know, the point of life. And that's what drives me every day, to wake up and impact my children and my home and my family first, and then impact everybody else I see. Sometimes that's a random stranger when we take walks, and I sit there and chat with them for 5 minutes. Some sweet old lady, man, give her a hug at the end, try and make her day. Sometimes it's online. Sometimes, you know, wherever we go, I think we can be a light. We can be positive. We can impact the world in a positive way. And so that, you know, that, my goal is to create a whole world that just, we have people waking up wanting to do this every day. You know, imagine a world like that.
Yeah, it's a nice world to imagine. Man, I love it. I do love it. And I love the positive impact that you bring. So it's been a pleasure. And I'm going to send you on your merry way. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Cheers, man.
If you want to find out a bit more about Tyler, you can link up with him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at Ty Romper. He's also on Instagram and YouTube. You can also check him out over there. His website is tylertote.crd.co, which is tylertode.crd.co. Lots to digest in this one today. And the one thing that underlines my conversation with Ty is his genuine empathy and compassion for people. Take it from me when I say there are very few people that will reach out to others if they detect there is some trauma or negative experience behind their online projections. We can all learn something from that. If you enjoyed today's episode, the greatest compliment you can give me is a rating or review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Also, share with friends or relatives you think may benefit. And don't forget, look me up and follow on Twitter and LinkedIn. The other thing that I just want to mention is you can also leave comments on the episodes on Spotify. So if there's a particular episode that resonates or something that you really took away that was beneficial, even a question that you want to ask me, just drop it under the episode on Spotify. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.